Could there be a link between ego depletion and the increase of depression in modern times? We think there could be. But it's not ego depletion itself. Rather, it's the theory of ego depletion that may be causing it. In this episode, we discuss what ego depletion is thought to be and why implicit belief in it does more harm than good. I'm Sharif Yunus with Dr. Kevin Majors, and this is The Golden Hour. Our online masterclass will give you a complete framework to increase your willpower and energy by challenging yourself according to your highest ideals. In this four-week masterclass available on OptimalWork.com, Dr. Majors will guide you through all the key ideas of OptimalWork with exercises provided to help you master them. Now let's get started. Hey, this is Sharif here with another episode of The Golden Hour, joined by Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, good to be here with you again.
Hey, Sharif, great to be back.
Well, Kevin, I was reading recently about willpower, and the question arose whether it's something that gets depleted over time a lot. And it seems like in psychology, a very popular metaphor for willpower was at some point like a muscle or strength training, so that as you exercise willpower, you kind of exhaust it. You deplete the resource of willpower, and then you lose the ability to have like a strong willpower later. So I just thought this would be a great thing for us to discuss together and kind of see where the science stands now and what our listeners can learn from it.
Yeah, Sharif, it's a great question. And this has been maybe the biggest question in psychology. So there is a very famous theory called the ego depletion theory, so that Roy Baumeister and his wife developed. And they had this way of proving that willpower is a depletable resource. So they did their studies, and then another group did similar studies and got the same results. Another group got similar results, until finally you had perhaps hundreds. Certainly more than 100 studies, quality studies, showing that there's a measurable impact of depletion, basically, when people exert themselves. So if you exert yourself to a certain level for, 15 minutes, and then you can actually measure how depleting that is. And then, curiously, if you have someone resist a temptation for a certain amount of time, the idea was after they have successfully resisted it, now they are more depleted and their performance on tasks that are difficult will be worse. So when I first read Baumeister's book called Willpower, which he wrote with someone from the New York Times, this was in 2012 it came out. It was a kind of a big deal. And it went against everything I thought, because one, they did these studies where people were being repleted with lemonade. So like if they did something like, say, resisted chocolate chip cookies for 15 minutes or something, some amount of time, and instead were just eating radishes while in a waiting room, that then they go and do this test. Well, the people who had to resist cookies, because they were told, they got a card saying you're to resist eating the cookies, it's not for you. So half the people got that, half the people didn't. And they found, those who resisted the cookies ended up doing worse on this test, which measured how depleted are you. Well, and we can go into that. There's a good way of measuring how depleted are you. Well, that just didn't make sense that one, it would be depleting. And two, that later they showed if you gave people lemonade, it restored their ability. So Baumeister had this idea that glucose restores willpower. That willpower is like really a physical thing. And that if you give people a break and give them glucose, then it's brought back. Okay, so that seemed really strange. But when you have tons and tons of studies supporting a theory, you kind of have to take it seriously. So that for me is a bit of a conundrum.
Interesting. So why did this strike you as so wrong? Because glucose is what our body uses to get energy. at least according to in one pathway. So why is that odd that if you're depleted of, or if you're kind of exercising your willpower, you're maybe using glucose. And then if you restore the glucose, you get more willpower. Why does that immediately strike you as odd?
Well, one is thousands of years of people studying temptation never once recommended having sugar water as a solution to temptation. And it doesn't seem like people who drink sugar water are the people who have the most self-control. So it seems to me that there is just some kind of obvious non-alignment here, that something isn't right. Now, of course, I do believe that people can get depleted by being physically exhausted and tired. So, and that's a different thing. You know, and in fact, we know what that is. That's the buildup of adenosine, your adenosine clock. As the day goes on, you know, then you, this just ticks away, adding to the, and gradually that produces what's called sleep pressure. And then you have to sleep. And caffeine works on adenosine so that it is inhibiting the effect of this clock so that you can, even if you didn't restore your sleep perfectly, you know, restore your adenosine levels during the night by sleeping, you didn't zero it out, that then you're still able with caffeine to get by. So, well, at no point did I feel like if in my life, if I had worked really hard in the day, I never felt like I had to go to bed 2 hours earlier. It's just on a 24-hour system. And so, and as long as you get enough sleep, you know, then it should be the same. And so, and I think this is human experience. I mean, who works so hard that they're like, oh, I got home at 5 p.m. and I just had to go to sleep? Well, depressed people are like that. But people who aren't depressed aren't like that. You know, and you can maintain. So this idea that there, so even when and there is a system in the body that we know is purely physical, the adenosine clock, still that it doesn't really work like that, where it's something that you move around or that you could somehow restore it with glucose. And then although we know about the science of fasting, that in fact, stamina increases with fasting, and it seems like willpower increases with fasting, and thousands of years of humans fighting temptation has taught us, I think, that fasting is really good for temptation. So that people are much less likely to give in to the, whatever would violate their ideals when they're fasting. And so that's why it seemed like this is just going the opposite direction from all of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, okay, just to be clear, there is, if you're physically exhausted, then you might have weaker willpower.
I think you might have a greater need for sleep, but I don't think that has to correlate with weaker willpower at all.
So what is willpower?
Exactly. So what is that we're talking about here? Are we talking about a physical thing or are we talking about a state of the will? So a state of the will in which doing what it wills is easy to it. Okay, so I think there are two states of the will where that's true. One is where, in fact, it's flourishing by choosing what's right for it. And so it chooses to be loving and kind and patient. It chooses that path of ideals. And what happens is it gets easier and easier to live them. And it's more second nature to be generous and loving and kind and all these things. Initially, yes. Initially, it's kind of tough, but the better it gets, it's like a student gets easier and the person has a lot more mastery in doing these things and it gets more meaningful. So meaning, mastery, pleasure, all increase. These are virtuous cycles. So the more virtuous cycles a person has built up in their life, the stronger their quote unquote willpower. So I think it's just the state of training of the will where it can essentially get what it wants with less inner turbulence. That doesn't mean in any way that it's physical, mm-hmm. you know, or that it can be summarized. The other state is vicious cycles where the person can get what they want, but what they want becomes more and more constricted to certain things. So the more the person gives himself over to heroin addiction, you know, then yeah, he can get the heroin whenever he wants, but it becomes harder to want anything else. So, and all his choices become more and more constricted to that choice. So, but I think that's like a negative sense here. And that's what it's just like, you know, with freedom. So you could have freedom for heroin, you know, and that leads to these vicious cycles and of heroin addiction. Or you could have the, you know, the freedom for the ideals. So that's another way of thinking about it. So I see willpower as a state of momentum that could be positive or negative in the choices we make. And so when you make good choices, then you get a momentum in making them. And that's the buildup of these virtuous cycles where it gets easier and easier and becomes more second nature and is what you want. Mm-hmm. But it could also be negative. So the idea that willpower could be something independent of the objects of the will being good or bad, you know, somehow being fit or not fit, to me, that seems a little strange. Like it's just a thing in itself. Because I think in behavioral therapy, we are much more used to dealing with people stuck in vicious cycles and then helping to free them and then get them to be building up virtuous cycles in their life. And then they seem to have more and more willpower to resist temptation, simply the more virtuous cycles build up in their life.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And the way that they are testing willpower is with a kind of neutral test. I guess the way they test depletion, or the way they try to get to the depletion, is by resisting temptation, which, well, could be good, or not eating cookies might be good.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be.
Exactly.
So there's kind of no like moral dimension to this in the research being done. Is that problematic, given that is it right to say that there's what you said before could be summarized as saying there's a moral dimension to the strength of will?
I would say it's a motivation dimension. So because it's about, is the person being motivated by, is their motivation being increased by the momentum of virtuous or vicious cycles? Momentum is another tricky category. But if you think of momentum itself as this, motivation is tricky, but if you think of it as a kind of momentum, then you can see that, okay, that it's easier to maintain a certain state of engagement, being really motivated, the more virtuous cycles you have supporting you. And that means that it's because this thing is more deeply meaningful for you and it's become more enjoyable over time. And really, those are always true human goods. So I think that behavioral therapy maybe has a bit of a fear of moralizing, which is right, because it's not enough for someone just to say to themselves, oh, this is bad, I shouldn't do it. You actually need to see, from a behavioral therapy perspective, more the image of what it looks like to thrive, the positive image. So we don't want people just having a rule-based thing of like, oh, I can't do that, or I have to do this. And that's maybe why I always just favor not using a different language of, you know, what it means like to have ideals and to be, you know, clarifying your picture of those ideals and making those real.
I see. Okay, interesting. So now getting back to kind of the main topic. So Roy Baumeister has this theory. He has this book published in 2012 that willpower gets depleted. And you're reading that book and it strikes you as off. So those are, okay. And part of it is that maybe his definition of willpower is wrong. He's looking at a physical definition of willpower, whereas for you, it's immaterial.
It's behavioral. Yeah.
It's behavioral. Okay.
Yeah. It's immaterial, but it's it's the origin of all behavior. Yeah. So it's a state of the will, you could say.
I see. Okay. What happens? So what happens next?
Well,
how does the
fascinating that, it didn't only strike me as being off, and there were other people. And especially I'm very happy to say some of my favorite people, like Carol Dweck and her lab at Stanford Medical School, they also started to see something is wrong here. And so they did then a series of studies that became very well known. So if you look up ego depletion and Carol Dweck, and someone who was a postdoc in her lab at the time, this is around 2010, I think. So Veronica Job, who is now at University of Vienna, you can see the fascinating questions that the Dweck lab raised about. Now, remember, Carol Dweck is all about growth mindset, you know, and so she raised questions about what is the effect of mindset on depletion. So, depleted you get after certain types of stresses, like resisting cookies or whatnot. Does that actually track your belief in how depleted you think you would be by those things? In other words, if you think something is going to deplete you and make it hard to do anything after that, does it make it so? Because in this, there are objective measures of depletion. Okay, so this is the thing. It's not just that people reported feeling depleted. It's that they were doing some tests that can actually measure. They're called Stroop tests, but they're pretty good at measuring, you know, how depleted is the person. And so what gets depleted is the person's engagement with the Stroop tests as they're doing the 48 trials that it takes. And they can see that after people really, you know, like struggled with temptation for a while, having cookies or not having cookies, or perhaps even eating the radish versus not eating it. So I don't know why you'd have radishes in the waiting room, but that was the study. You know, half the people could have radishes, half the people could have cookies. And they found the cookie eaters were not depleted, but the radish eaters were depleted. Well, it seems that what we know then is that those people objectively were not engaging a further test later on, and that's what we call depletion. Okay. Well, the cool thing is, as they started going deeper into this, Carol Dweck and Veronica Job, actually I think mostly Veronica, ended up running a major study looking at people in Asia, particularly India, to look, because they have a completely different belief system about effort there in India. Notably, and this is something that they actually measured, they are far more likely to think that difficult or strenuous kinds of mental work is energizing. Okay, in the US and the West, it's seen as enervating. Okay, that you are going to, so we just believe in the West that academic type work, intellectual type work, or computer based things, that is, if it's really intensely, it requires a lot of attention, it's going to deplete you in some real way. And in fact, then when you study Westerners, it does deplete them. But in India, that's not the case. And when they actually get energized by these things, well, that means that there's nothing necessary about this. And this is another case of self-fulfilling prophecies. If you believe that certain types of draining tasks will deplete you, you will actually be objectively depleted afterwards. But then they further showed that you can switch people. You can prime them, you know, to want to get not depleted with difficult tasks just by telling them that willpower is not a limited resource. Essentially, we have an unlimited resource of willpower. If you tell people that, they in fact will not be depleted by it. So, and I think it works the other way too, that if you tell them it's a limited resource, then they start trying to conserve it. So it's fascinating that when they did a multi-center trial, thousands of people worldwide, Roy Bimoster helped to design the trial so that it wouldn't be biased against his ego depletion theory. They could not reproduce it in a worldwide basis at all. But in fact, you know, then right after that, Dweck and her team came out showing that here's the thing, it's mediated by your prediction, your mindset. So that was the biggest overturn of an idea in all of psychological history, you know, when there was this kind of registered trial of ego depletion and it showed no effect. In fact, that trial showed in some of the centers worldwide, or at least in one, there is a reverse effect that the more depleting, you know, the more temptation people fought off. They weren't using cookies. They had graduated to another way of doing it. In fact, they were able to continue doing strenuous things after that. So I think that also lent credence to what Dweck and her and Job and their team did. But it's just fascinating to me that, that you could have people around the world saying, something's not right here. And it turns out to be exactly what we're always talking about here of it's about the mindset going in. You know, and are you setting yourself up to be depleted by believing that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very cool story, very interesting. I have a quick kind of specific question about it. So for the people who do think that they will get depleted and then they in fact do get depleted, is it that they're really getting depleted, or are we saying that they just are thinking in their heads, well, I better, since this task, doing it intensely could deplete me, I better not do it too intensely because I have stuff I need to do the rest of the day. So I should just take it easy during this task. Are they kind of thinking through it like that? Or is it that because they resisted the cookie or whatever wasn't the case and believed that that would deplete them, that they therefore got depleted actually?
Yeah, that's a great question. It seems that they were being distracted by perceived exhaustion. That's another thing that Veronica Job is able to kind of clarify, that it was perceived exhaustion that increased with the prediction of depletion. So having it predicted that they would be depleted left them on the lookout for feeling exhausted or tired. And then they made exhaustion really salient. And then as they were doing something, they started feeling like this is taking more effort. They started experiencing effort as exhaustion, it seems. At least that'd be one theory. But so they had a high perceived exhaustion, whereas people who didn't predict depletion experienced zero perceived exhaustion. This strikes me as one of these phenomena that I've noticed that sometimes I think it's dangerous to like measure things too closely. You know, I'm a huge fan of Whoop, you know, and this thing that can measure your recovery, you know, and give you a recovery score every single day. But I noticed that if I got a very low recovery score and I knew it, that the day would seem much more difficult. I'd be tuned in to pick up tiredness or exhaustion. Whereas if I didn't look at my recovery score on Whoop, I would feel great. And then sometimes I would look at the end of the day and I'd be shocked that I had thought that this was a really high recovery day and turns out it was a really low recovery day. So, and I think that's fit my, you know, other people I've known who've had that experience. I still think they're great devices to be able to start to see how do you make changes that result in increasing levels of recovery, as an aside. But sometimes knowing too much about how well you slept isn't helpful. Because it's better because you're going to think, oh, now everything is going to be hard or everything's going to be painful. No, it's actually more the prediction puts you on the lookout for signs and then you see them everywhere. And then it's a reinforcing cycle. Oh, no, now I can tell how tired I am. But in the India study with Job, where they're looking at how much you're depletable depends on your beliefs about depletion, they actually were pretty good at showing this is perceived exhaustion that mediated it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a great takeaway. So then I wonder for our listeners and maybe a little bit for me too, how do we put this into practice? I think one thing we've talked about before is that like with the amygdala, you can't really reason with your amygdala. So now that you've told me this, is this something that now I'm cured or do I have to do something else to like kind of undo maybe this the results of my Western education to start thinking that exercising willpower will actually energize me? How do I get myself to believe that or get that to be a reality in my life?
Yeah. Well, just real quick, because you said Western education, I think that you're remembering what was in Veronica Job's India paper, they think that it is the school system in the West, particularly the US, that in the 19th century started seeing attentional resources in kids, you know, as depletable. And so therefore they would limit the number of days a week. So they got rid of Saturday classes. They'd limit the number of months a year. They got rid of, you know, some of the summer classes. Not just to make room for people like, you know, like working on a farm, but even in cities, because they were afraid of over depleting the children. And so there is a case that could be made, and there's a book that makes it, that had a profound impact on America. You know, that we started to see willpower essentially as depletable, in part from the school experience. Now, whether or not that's true, I don't know, but it's a fascinating idea that somehow in the West, we just got a very entrenched idea that people are depletable and they have to protect themselves to not be depleted, which of course has some, there's some cases where that's true. You need sleep, you need food. But where you see it carried too far is in depression. And when people are depressed, they're constantly using this kind of Baumeister ego depletion model. Like and that's why I say that depression can be thought of as a phobia of depletion. People are so afraid of being depleted that they don't remotely deplete themselves. They stay in bed longer and they don't go to work and they drop out of social events, you know, as a way of making sure they're not depleted. But that's exactly the wrong direction. So what people need is basically engagement with of challenges according to their highest ideals. To jump to it, the best way of overcoming depletion is to engage challenge guided by ideals. Ideals end up giving us something positive to be practicing. That's motivating in the sense of giving us dopamine. We get a sense now of where we want to go, and we can see that there's a meaning in this challenge as somehow shaping us according to this ideal. The beautiful thing about ideals is that they leaven challenge. They change challenge from within, and they actually make engaging it into a good thing because it becomes the pathway towards actually making progress towards this ideal. So that's how you get on the path of virtuous cycles, and that's what provides you with the momentum. Only behavior guided by ideals produces virtuous cycles. So, but once you start engaging challenges, you know, using your ideals as a kind of compass to show the right way, then you start getting the right kind of momentum. So I think that's a really crucial thing. I also think that on Optimal Work, we have the inventory. And the inventory is 24 items that are essentially measuring your momentum. But each of them is so easy to make practical. And we help people to do it with the advice that we give them. So that right when you take it, you get some advice. You know, but I think this is like one of the, you know, it's a hugely important part of Optimal Work, you know, is that we're showing people all these virtuous cycles waiting to happen. You know, and so that gives people concrete things to work on that they can practice in a very frequent way. Okay, well, in the end, as their inventory scores go up, their quote unquote willpower goes up. And we find that the higher people's inventory score goes, the more capable they are of always staying faithful to their ideals. So it's willpower. So they find that now they can guide their behavior and it's much less effortful because they have so much good momentum in their life. So that's actually the goal of the inventory, is to show people a path of doing that that's super concrete.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, Kevin, that's really great. So you're basically saying one way at the beginning was to kind of just sidestep the issue. Don't even think about you having finite willpower, getting energized when you resist temptation. Don't even think about that. Just engage challenge according to your highest ideals.
Exactly. It's just like, you know, before starting a task, you don't ask yourself, how motivated am I to do this? Which is asking, do I feel like doing this? And I think the willpower question is the same. People are like, do I really feel like doing this? But that shouldn't be the question. Is doing this going to help me pursue my ideals? And ultimately, you know, love in the end. Is doing this going to help me to be that or not?
Yes. Awesome, Kevin. Well, that takes us to the end of our time now. But so I don't know if you have any final thoughts you want to leave us with.
Well, maybe it's just this idea that in the end, to have the highest willpower is to be the most loving person you can be. Love is willpower in the end. Rightly ordered and like flourishing kind of love. And that's the ideal of love that we speak of. But it's the sense that you're asking yourself, what would it mean to be loving, you know, in, you know, dealing with this person in the store, dealing with this client, this patient, dealing with this colleague, dealing with this family member. to be seeing that that always lets us be on the path of building up these incredibly important virtuous cycles. So, and in the end, then you have the strongest will.
Awesome. Kevin, I'll give it a shot.
Great. I will too.
Okay, good, good. Well, thanks so much, Kevin. And we'll be back next week. Well, thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to check out optinwork.com for a set of online tools to help you engage challenge in your life. See you next week.